Chapter 12. Sirens, screams and silence, here be monsters. Cestus's teeth clenched at the horrific noises emanating from within the isolation chamber. Excelinor and Amrix followed their captain's example, stoically bearing the sounds of psychic torture, secretly glad that they were not the subject of Motep's attentions. Through the viewport, the isolation cell was shrouded in shadow. Cestus could see Motep from the back only. The thousand sun moved almost imperceptibly as he stood before the prisoner, who by contrast spasmed intermittently as his mind was ransacked. On several occasions, when the screaming was at its height, Cestus had wanted to go in and end it, abhorred at the mental damage being inflicted on what was once a brother Astartes, but he had stopped himself every time, even warning off Excelinor and Amrix from taking action. Instead, the two battle brothers had turned away from the viewport, leaving Cestus alone to observe the imagined horrors of the word-bearer's torture. Twice already, he had angrily ordered worried armsmen away after they'd come to investigate the sound, fearing another warp attack as they patrolled the decks. As the shipboard vox crackled, issuing a warning obliquely, they were right. "Captain Cestus, come to the bridge at once. We are under attack." Loath as he was to leave Motep, albeit with Excelinor and Amrix, Cestus had little choice but to do as bidden. He reached the bridge quickly, and Saphrax quickly apprised him of the situation. The alert had come when several unknown projectiles had been expelled from the vicinity of the Furious Abyss and were snaking across the warp towards the Wrathful. At first, it was believed that the missiles were in fact torpedoes launched in a punitive attempt to dissuade pursuit. That assumption was crushed in the moment when Admiral Kaminska's helmsmistress Venkmeyer had identified their erratic trajectory, and the truth had been revealed. "Sirens!" Kaminska breathed, looking up at the tactical display before her that showed the inexorable advance of the creatures. A dark atmosphere seemed to pervade the bridge, and the Admiral looked uncomfortable because of it. Her uniform was in slight disarray. She had clearly been roused from quarters when the alert had come in, and only added to her apparent sense of unease. "I had thought such things were void-born myths." "They are the denizens of the Empyrean," Cestus told her, the disquieting mood affecting him less acutely. Something was awry. The ultramarine captain put it down to the sudden appearance of the warp beasts. "Can we avoid them, Admiral?" Kaminska's face was grave as she considered the path of the warp creatures on the tactical display in front of her command throne. "Admiral," Cestus said sternly, snapping Kaminska free of the dark mood that had suddenly ensnared her. "Yes, Captain," she gasped, face pale and unsteady in her command throne. "Can Orcadas find a way around these creatures?" Kaminska shook her head. "We are on the collision course." Cestus turned to Saphrax. "Ready the honor guard and have them gather on the assembly deck at once. Amrix and Excelinor, too." He didn't want to leave Motep alone, but the warp creatures threatened the safety of the ship, and he would need all of his battle brothers to defend it. On balance, it was a risk worth taking. "Captain," said Kaminska as the ultramarine was leaving. Cestus turned and looked at her, noticing that helmsmistress Venkmeyer had moved to her aid. Kaminska warned off her second-in-command with a glance. "What is it, Admiral?" Cestus asked. "If these creatures are indeed native to the warp, how are we to stop them?" "I don't know," answered the Astartes, and then left the bridge. Quite what the warp looked like was a question that could never be answered. The human mind was not designed to comprehend it, which was why only specialized mutants like Orcadas could look upon it, and even then with a third eye that did not truly perceive it, merely filtering out the parts that would otherwise drive him mad. Certainly there was something ophidian or shark-like about the creatures that closed in on the Wrathful. In truth, they neither intercepted nor followed it, but stalked it from all directions at once, creeping up from the past and gliding in from the future to converge on the point of fragile space-time that held the Wrathful in its bubble. They had eyes, lots of eyes. Their bodies were writhing strings of non-matter, which could take on any shape because they had no true form to begin with, but there were always eyes. They had wings, too, which were also claws and fangs, and masses of pendulous blubber to keep them warm against the nuclear cold of the warp's storms. They burned and shimmered with acid, and shed daggers of ice from their scales. They had been born in the abyss, and had never been forced by the tyranny of reality into one form. To stay the same from one moment to the next would have been as alien to them as the warp was to a human mind. Lamprey mouths opened up. The predators made themselves coterminous with the wrathful, forcing themselves into unfamiliar frames of logic to avoid annihilation by the protective energy fields that surrounded the ship. The minds inside were brimming with the potential for madness, delicious insanity to be suckled upon. The predators fed normally on scraps, moments of emotion or agony powerful enough to bloom in the warp and be consumed. Here, there were lifetimes worth of sensation to be drained, enough for any one of the wraiths to become bloated and terrible, a whale drifting through the abyss big enough to feed upon its own kind. Thousands of bright lights flickered in the ship, each one both a potential feast and a gateway for the non-physical predators. One of them found an unprotected mind, and easing itself painfully into the rules of reality, forced its way in. The screams were the first signs that anything was wrong on the lance deck. The lance's immense laser cannon, hooked up to the plasma reactors in the ship's stern, had been silent since the duel with the furious abyss outside the solar system. The gun gangs still tended to them because lasers were temperamental, especially when they had to funnel the titanic levels of power that could surge through a laser lance, and the gun gangs were constantly busy hammering out imperfections in focusing lenses and cleansing the laser conduits, which could misfire if any blemish refracted too much power in the wrong direction. One ganger fell from his perch high up on the inner hull, where he had been aligning one of the huge mirrors. He hit the ground with a wet crump that told the gang chief that he was most certainly dead. It was a sound he had heard many times before. The gang chief was in no hurry to see what had become of the fallen ganger. Deaths meant hassle. The gang would be one short, so someone would have to be drafted from somewhere else on the ship, and the wrathful had lost plenty of men already, and they were in the abyss. For a man to die in the abyss was bad luck. Some said if you died in the warp, you never got out, and even with the suppression of religions in the fleet, you couldn't stop a void-born superstition like that. The dead man, however, was not dead. When the gang chief reached the body, he saw it mewling like a drowning animal, writhing around on its back, with its wrists and ankles shaking as if it was trying to right itself. The gang chief expressed displeasure that the man was still alive, since he would undoubtedly die soon, and carting him off to the sick bay was another inconvenience the gun crews didn't need. The dying man's body distended with a cracking of ribs. One side of his body split off from the other, organs separating as his pelvis split. His sternum snapped free, and false ribs pinged against the laser housing beside him. His body rippled up from the floor into a writhing, pulsing arch of flesh and bone, drizzling blood onto the gunmetal deck. The crewman's head lolled to one side, its jaw wrenched at an angle, its eyes still open. The space within the arch twisted and went dark. The predator forced its way through, spilling out onto the floor like the contents of a split belly, feeling blindly, eyes blinking, as they evolved to absorb light. Then the screaming started. It was carnage in the lance decks, absolute carnage. The warning icons had blazed through the ship, coupled with a frantic vox chatter about monsters and the dead coming back to life, before it cut off ominously. Reconnoitering with his battle brothers on the assembly deck, Cestus had led the honour guard, fully armed, to the lance decks, and there they stood to bear witness to the horror. The ultramarine captain wondered for a moment whether he'd been wrong all along, whether the imperial truth itself was wrong, and that the hells of those primitive faiths really did exist to be given form in the lance decks. He dismissed his doubts as heretical, crushing them beneath his iron-hard resolve and his loyalty to Reboot Gilliman. Even still, what he saw warred with what he desperately tried to believe. Bodies were painted across the walls in ragged smears of skin and muscle. The faces of the gang ratings were ripped open in expressions of horror and stared out from heaps of torn limbs. Flesh and viscera were draped across high girders ahead or over the massive workings of the lances themselves. The focusing mirrors and lenses were sprayed with blood. The living writhed in a single mass, smearing themselves with gore and sinking their teeth into one another. Spectral threads of glowing black wrapped around the spines of the bleeding revelers. The threads led up to the ceiling of the lance deck, where a titanic mass of darkness squatted, a seething thing of eyes and mouths, gibbering and chuckling as it manipulated the lance deck's crew into further depths of suffering. Cestus was an Astartes. He had seen extraordinary, horrible things, amorphous aliens that consumed their own to be ready for battle, insect things that broke up into swarms of seething, biting horrors, whole worlds infected or dying, whole stars boiling away in the death throes of a species. But he had never seen anything like this. "Weapons free!" he raged. A brutal chorus of bolter fire rang out to his order, puncturing the mass of flesh and exploding it from within. Thestor swung his heavy bolter around and added his own punishing shots to the salvo. Terrible screeching filled the tight space and resonated in his battle helm, auditory limiters struggling to modulate the horrible keening of the damned ratings. The dangling threads held by the warp creature began to sever one by one as the munitions of the Astartes struck and detonated with fury. It snarled its displeasure, revealing row upon row of fine needle-like fangs and a slavering spectral tongue that appeared to taste their essence. Like a lightning strike, the tongue lashed out and speared Thestor through his cuirass. He bellowed in pain, heavy bolter fire flaring as he triggered the weapon in his death throes. The honor guard scattered as the errant shell strafed the deck, and Thestor shook and went into spasm as he was lifted into the air, impaled on the warp spawn's tongue.
"Burn it!"
cried Cestus in desperation. "Burn it all!" Morar stepped forward with his flamer and doused the tunnel in roaring, white-hot promethium. Thestor and the creature's transfixing tongue were immolated in cleansing fire. The warp spawn reeled, shrieking in anger as it recoiled from the attack. Morar swept the cone of intense heat downward, cooking the conjoined mass of the dead ratings. As the warp spawn gave ground, Cestus noticed patches of Icarus fluid spattering the deck in its wake. "If it can bleed," he thought, "we can kill it."
"Advance on me," cried the ultramarine captain. "Courage and honour!" "Courage and honour!" his battle brothers bellowed in reply.
Brooding in the temporary barrack room afforded to the space wolves on board the Wrathful, Bryngar had heard the alert screaming through the ship and had mustered his warriors. Tracking the commotion to the lower lance decks, he and his blood claws were unprepared for the sight that greeted them as they descended into the gloom. It was a charnel house. Flayed flesh lined the walls and blood slicked the floor. Bones, still red with gore, lay discarded in mangled piles. Screams were etched upon the visages of skulls locked in their last moments of agony. The bloody massacre was not, however, what gave the Space Wolf captain pause. It was the nightmare creature tearing at chunks of flesh with its teeth. At their approach, the beast, a luminous shark-like horror, turned, its lipless maw smeared with blood, its swollen belly engorged.
"Here be monsters,"
Bryngar breathed, and felt a quail of something unfamiliar, an alien emotion, trickle down his spine. He found his courage quickly, baring his fangs as he howled. The space wolves launched at the creature, blades drawn. Motep staggered from the isolation chamber, not surprised to see that he was alone. He had broken the traitor, though it had not been easy. He felt the sweat of his exertions beneath his helmet and was breathing heavily as he stepped into the adjoining corridor. Of the subject known as Altis, for he had given his name before the end, there was precious little left. A drooling cage of flesh and bone were all that remained. His conditioned defences, ingrained by years of fanatical indoctrination, had been tough to break, but as a result, when they had fallen hard. Only a shell remained, a gibbering wreck incapable of further defiance, incapable of anything. Exhausted as he was, Motep groaned when he detected the rogue presence on board the ship. Mustering what reserves of strength he had left, he made for the lance decks. Morar was dead. His bifurcated body lay in two halves across the deck. Amrix was badly wounded, but alive. He slumped against an upright beneath a metal arch, a chunk of flesh ripped from his torso. A dark mass was boiling down the corridor behind Cestus, even as the honor guard faced off against the first warp predator, torrents of semi-liquid flesh bursting through doorways in a flood. Eyes formed in the mass, focusing on the Astartes. The ultramarine swiveled his body around, barking a warning before his bolter blazed, the muzzle flare lighting up the dark around him. A long tongue of dark muscle thrashed blindly past him from the creature's gaping mouth, and Cestus threw himself out of its path. Leradis, desperately ministering to the wounded Amrix, was not so lucky. The membrane lashed around him, sending spines of pain throughout his body. The apothecary screamed as the flesh suddenly dried and split open, fist-sized seeds spilling from the fibrous interior. The seeds burst into life, tiny buzzing wings shearing through the shells and long sharp mandibles splintering out. Leradis was eviscerated in the storm in a bloody haze of bone, flesh and armour. Cestus cried out and swung his bolt pistol back around. He picked off the insectoid creatures with precise shots as they buzzed towards him, letting out his breath to steady his aim. He caught the last with his free hand. Cestus mashed it into the wall before it could chew through the ceramite of his gauntlet. With the two warp creatures on either side, the ultramarines were being crushed into a tight circle. Even as he continued to pummel the second warp fiend with bolt pistol fire, he heard Saffrax bellow the name of Rabut Gilliman, punctuated by the retort of his weapon. The burning flare of expelled plasma hit the side of his face, and the ultramarine captain knew that their other special weapon-bearer, Pyteron, was still with them. Muzzle flashes blazing, Lexinol and Excelinor continued to fire their bolters, war cries on their lips. The chorus of battle raged as the warp predators closed, weaving and twisting impossibly from the worst of the ultramarine's fusillade, shrieking and screeching whenever they were struck and forced back. Cestus checked the ammo reader on his bolt pistol. His remaining rounds wouldn't last long. Divided as they were, he and his battle brothers would be unable to destroy either creature like this. With little recourse left, he made his decision.
"All guns with me!" he cried. "In the name of Gilliman, concentrate fire!"
With no hesitation, the ultramarines turned their combined fire onto one of the warp creatures. Not expecting the sudden storm, the beast was caught unawares. Desperately trying to weave and jink out of harm's way, it was struck by a barrage of bolter rounds. Superheated plasma scorched its flank, and a precise salvo from Cestus struck it in the eye. A keening wail emanated from the dread creature as it shuddered out of existence, expelled from the bubble of real space within the wrathful. However, the victory proved costly as the second creature surged unhindered to the ultramarine's position, suddenly buoyed by the presence of three more of its kin. Cestus and his battle brothers turned as one, defiant war cries on their lips as they prepared to sell their lives dearly. The rending of flesh as their bodies were torn asunder, the stench of blood and the sound of shredding bone failed to materialize. Poised with jaws outstretched, ready to devour the Astartes, the warp creatures were assailed by a blazing crimson light that bathed the corridor in an incandescent luster. The beasts recoiled and shrank before him, snapping ineffectually at the air as the building aura seared them.
"Warp spawn filth!" spat a voice behind Cestus, echoing with power. "Flee back into the abyss and leave this plane of existence!"
Shielding his eyes against the brilliance of the light, Cestus saw Motep striding towards them, a cerulean nimbus of psychic energy coursing over his armored body. He held a golden spear in his outstretched hand.
"Down, now!" he cried,
and the ultramarines hit the floor with a crash of ceramite. The spear arced over their heads like a divine bolt of lightning and pierced the first warp beast, tearing through its slithering flank and slathering the deck with dark grey spilling gore. Its death cry reverberated in the confines of the vaulted tunnel, the metal upright screaming before it. Then it was gone, leaving an actinic stench in its wake. The kindred beasts came at him, enduring the furious energy that the Thousand Sun had unleashed, but were driven back as Cestus and his honour guard crouched on their knees and delivered a punishing salvo.
"Blind them!"
Motep cried, plucking his spear from the air as it returned to him as if magnetized to his gauntlet. The ultramarines obeyed, aiming for the hideous black orbs that served the shark-like predators as eyes. More screeching filled the corridors as the shots found their marks, rupturing the glassy orbs. Motep cast his spear again, and another of the creatures was thrust back into the immaterium. The last predator turned in on itself and reformed. It grew fresh eyes, dripping with glowing ichor. It extruded a frill of tendrils from what Cestus assumed was its head end, and they became tough, jointed limbs tipped with claws, snake-like tongues whipped from its mouth. A hail of fire struck it, and it was blasted into a gory mess upon the deck. Curious, ringing silence filled the void where the eruption of bolters and the bark of shouting had been. Red-tinged gloom from the emergency lights drifted back into focus after the monochromatic battle flare of muzzle flashes and psychic conflagration. Cestus surveyed his battle brothers. Amrix lay still against the upright, injured but alive. The service of Leradis and Moravo had ended, their final moments awash with blood and pain. The rest had survived. A weary nod from Safrax confirmed it. Breathing hard, a strange, subdued exultance at their victory sweeping over him, Cestus looked back around at Motep. The Thousand Sun staggered, the crimson light extinguished.
"They are gone,"
he breathed, and fell hard onto the deck.